Season 2, Episode 19, Dr. Takrid Al-Sarraj, Language Anxiety.
This is the Actual Fluency Podcast, helping you become a better language learner by providing motivating weekly inspiration, as well as top tips and tricks from expert guests. And now, your host, Chris Broholm.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Actual Fluency Podcast. This is your host, Chris Broholm, with a K now. Today's episode is unfortunately not going to be as good as I had hoped. Today's guest is Dr. Takrid Al-Sarraj, and she's a postdoctoral researcher in language anxiety as the main topic. So that's super interesting, and also for me personally, because it's something I suffer from, and I know a lot of people do. And what happened was, we recorded the interview, and during the interview we got disconnected from Skype, and when we reconnected, my recording software failed to re-record the next segment, or more specifically, it only recorded my voice, which is, I can post a podcast of me asking questions, but it's not really going to do much good, and it's not going to be a good episode. But half of the interview was salvaged and it was working. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play that segment for you today. That means the episode is going to be slightly shorter, but it's a very interesting topic. Today we talk about how teachers and students can decrease language anxiety, how especially teachers can make improvements to classroom teaching, or, well, I guess it also applies to one-on-one teaching, to reduce the anxiety in each student and thus bringing on more language learning development. And we also talk in general about language learning methods and how classroom, the old school way of teaching thing, rote learning, probably not the best way. But the other half, we talked about the last half, we talked about her story, how she was brought up in Saudi Arabia, Arabia, and moved to the United States when she was young, and she lives in the U.S. to this day. And in the book, there are a lot of cultural contrasts between Saudi Arabia and the West in general. And as a Westerner, I found it really interesting and exciting to read some of these things, because you can have some opinions about the Middle East, and a lot of the times it's really the media trying to create some kind of picture of the Middle East. And as an ignorant Westerner, it was really interesting to read some of these things in the book, like how much education has improved, how much, you know, women's rights have improved. And, you know, as my guest today says, you know, Saudi Arabia is a very young country, so the fact that they don't quite have all the as much progress as a country like the U.S., it makes a lot of sense. But it can be hard to, if you're just an ignorant Westerner like me, to understand why women can't drive, why they have, you know, forced marriages and stuff like that. And that's also dealt with in the book, and it makes a lot of sense, I think. But unfortunately, that segment was lost due to a technical error. And for once, it wasn't my own stupidity that led to the technical error, unfortunately. But it's a real shame, and I know Dr. Al-Sarraj is quite busy, so I'm going to try and get her to come back on and tell her story again, and if she has the time. And if you have any questions for Dr. Al-Sarraj, then please do ask them in the comments field on Facebook or send me an email. You probably know the channels. And I'll try and ask it to her in the upcoming recording if I can make that happen. And of course, the whole reason that I invited her to the podcast was to talk about her book as well, The Anxious Language Learner, A Saudi Woman's Story. And basically, that was the first part of the interview that was sadly lost. The part that wasn't lost is, like I said, talking about anxious students and how to deal with language anxiety as a teacher or as a student. And we get into talking about general language learning methods. So without further ado, I'm gonna jump you straight into the interview. It's going to be a little bit shorter today than usual, but like I said, I'm sorry for the technical difficulties here. It is sometimes a bit of a challenge to run a podcast, but I'm doing my best here, and I hope you enjoy this little segment this week, and I hope that you will tune back in when I hopefully get the second part of the interview re-recorded one of these days. So hope you have a great Friday, or whatever day it is when you're listening to this. Here in Budapest, it's 35 degrees and clear skies, so we're all melting, but wherever you are in the world, I hope you're having a great day and you're learning lots of languages. So until the next week, this is Chris Borholm, and enjoy the interview. How can teachers improve the classroom?
Teachers are reported as the number one factor in my research as anxiety provoking. And it's not only, like you said, in Denmark, it's all over. But in the Arab world, maybe it's even more. What happened was is that when teachers are teaching, they think, you know, I'm teaching them this material. But it's not only the material that the teacher is teaching, especially in languages, even more. Maybe in math, you're teaching them how to solve this problem, and they could do it logically later on. But when you're talking in languages, the personality of the teacher comes into effect. How the teacher is teaching that material. Is she compassionate with and relating to you? Or is she very stiff and tough? Because all these personality things come into effect. So the teacher is not only teaching the material, but also the personality of that teacher comes into effect. So a lot of students says, I hate the language class because of the teacher. I don't want to go into the class because of the teacher. And so it's not saying that the teacher is not good or bad. Now, I'm not saying at all that. I'm just saying that teachers have to be aware that personality of the teacher plays a big role in how they teach the material.
Right.
And so if the teacher can make the students less anxious by her engaging in the classroom, meaning that she explains to the students that, you know what, we're going to make mistakes in this classroom, and this classroom was, you know, is a must to do that. And let's all laugh together rather than laugh at each other, and make that classroom as a family oriented way, so that students are not competing against each other and not trying to, you know, get more attention from the teacher. So if the teacher pays one student more attention than the others, the other students are going to be discouraged, because they go, oh, she's the favorite here. No matter what we say or what we try, it's not going to make a difference. So we'd never even put up our hands or to participate in the class, which was ridiculous. But, you know, sometimes when somebody talks as a teacher, you answer and you talk back and you have that conversation, while the others, they're not that fluent maybe in the language. But they see that, okay, she's talking to them, just pay more attention. She's the favorite, or he's the favorite of the teacher. And those things I thought was like ridiculous to even think about. But you know what? Guess it is. It's very important for these other students. So the teacher might do things and she doesn't even, or he doesn't even know what they're doing is wrong or right. And it doesn't, it's not necessarily wrong.
Right.
It's just what happens. But these students are very, very sensitive, because the anxiety makes them that way. So your brain plays tricks on you and say like, oh, anything that happened, this happened because of that. It's just, there's always a reason for it. Okay, so there's a blame is always on somebody else, but not you. And I'm not saying that the blame should be on you, but it's like, oh, the teacher didn't explain it. The teacher didn't, you know, she didn't make me love this class, or she didn't do this, or she was very tough. Of course, if you have a tough teacher, then that's another deterrent from continuing with the language. Yes, I can agree on that. But I mean, so the teachers have a big say or a big role on reducing the anxiety. One of the first things that I always mention is that when you go into the language class, I think the teacher should, and a must to reduce the student's anxiety, is to confront it firsthand and say, you know what? we are going to make lots of mistakes, but it's okay. You know, I also make mistakes. You guys make mistakes. We never learned this language at the beginning, or, you know, we are going back in time as if we are children and we're trying to learn this language. So please do not get embarrassed or whatever. So the minute you have that open conversation with the students and you're telling them, please don't get discouraged when you make a mistake, keep on trying. They see the teacher as a motivationer for them, that she's or he's accepting the mistakes. That means it's okay to make them. But if they just want to impress the teacher and make everything right and say everything, you know, correct, they're not going to try unless they're perfect, which nobody is perfect.
Right.
And then you'll see a lot of silence in the classroom. And I had that. I had one of the class, I had one, and it was one semester. I had a very silent class, and it was so frustrating. I couldn't get the students to speak because they all wanted to be perfect, and nobody is perfect. Mm-hmm. So I started making jokes about my learning and when I was little, and then I started cracking jokes, and they started little by little, you know, engaging with me, and then they started talking, and that was the only time that I could get them, you know, to speak. And so that is, there's lots of challenges that the language teacher faces, but let's make the language class fun. First of all, it has to be fun,
right?
Or nobody's gonna be, you know, everybody's gonna be competing against each other or trying to impress the teacher or others in the classroom. But if you make it fun, then it becomes as a team effort, not an individual. And that's what we're trying to make, a team effort. Like, let's all, you know, work together to help each other to learn this language. So we have a common goal. The common goal is let's learn this language.
Right. And in the book, speaking about the method, you also spend a few sentences talking about the rote learning, which is obviously a problem that is shared universally. I think I can say that without too much research, across the world. And every single person I talk to on this podcast, they all say, okay, maybe 99 out of 100 say that language learning in school is terrible, and rote learning just doesn't make any sense. And why are we still doing it?
Yeah, see, I also, I had a chance to go to Tokyo in Japan in a program with the Ministry of Education there when I was in London. And we had a chance to go into the schools and to see how they were teaching. For me, I was interested in how they were teaching the language. But we were like 15 of us on this program. And I was like, going to Japan, okay, then they must have real high-tech stuff. And, you know, I'm anticipating, all this anticipation is like Japan, high-tech, everything. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to see every kid has an iPad or whatever on his hand and doing whatever. And when I go into the schools, I went to elementary, middle school, I think, no, high school, yes. And I went there and I was completely in shock how they were teaching the languages. And I thought, you know, Japan of all, I mean, I thought I had more, a lot of expectations, but they were teaching it in a rote method. And I was like, what? We're still doing that?
Yeah.
Even in Japan, you know, of all places? But, you know, I mean, that was my expectation. I mean, it's rote method. It can only get so far. Good grades on paper, but when you're starting to talk to people, there is no right and wrong, and, you know, get it right or no, let's move this verb here and let's move the noun here. It's nothing like that, and it's all about trial and error. And so that doesn't work. I'm not a keen, and I'm not, you know, they could be good things for rote method, but I'm telling you, language learning and rote method for me and a lot of people that I've seen does not work. There's benefits for rote method, but I'm not an advocate for that, because I hate to be, you know, regurgitating all this, you know, information, and life is not like that. And I think I'm a very practical person, and I want to teach something that is for practical use and for not to learn you know, things in a systematic way. It never happens. Life is not like that.
Right. I think the best example or analogy for me was definitely when somebody compared it to maths and said, you know, the way we teach children languages today is exactly like we teach maths. And that's ridiculous because those two disciplines are so different.
Exactly. That's a good one. That's a really good one.
It's like you, in maths, you want to remember a lot of things, a lot of formulas, a lot of rules. But in language learning, it's about learning sentences through a natural progression. It's not just, you know, even vocabulary learning is, you know, kind of useless in a way. I mean, if you know a good sentence structure, you can speak almost naturally with just a few hundred words, whereas you can learn thousands of words and not say a thing if you only use the memorization.
and that's another thing that I used to be when I used to see when I was even doing doing my undergraduate or master's, when I was taking classes, I would see a lot of Chinese and Asian students get really high marks on papers, really high marks. And I was like, wow, fantastic. But they couldn't speak. They could not speak. Right. They knew all the rules, the formulas, like you said, but they could not speak two words because they were used to performing on paper. But in real life, language is not like that. Language is about learning the culture, learning the words, learning the vocabulary, how to structure it. And it's a lot of things that goes in it. And it's not like a formula, just memorize and just produce. It's not that.
Right.
Especially the culture comes into place. Like I grew up and I did my undergraduate and master's in the US, but when I did my PhD, I went to the UK. And when I was there, even they speak English, both. But with that, I still had to adjust for the culture shock. I was there with that, you know, when I was ordering at any fast food, and I was like, this is to go. And they would say, like, what do you mean by to go? And I'm like, you know, I'm taking it to go. And they could say, oh, so you mean take away? And I'm like, yeah, right, take away, yeah. But so to go and take away, and then rubbish and a bin, or a garbage, and so all these little words, even that, and they're both speak English, but it's different English, you know. So you know, you can understand what I'm saying, but if I say go get in the queue, an American system was like, what queue? What's the queue for? what does the queue mean? They think the letter Q. I'm like, oh no, in line, get in line, and so even with that. You know, and can you imagine? Okay, I know all the rules. I'm English. I was born. This is my actual native language. I still have to adjust for that. How can you adjust for that if you're just doing the rote method?
Exactly. And if,
it is. It's very, very, very important to deviate from this rote method. Maybe it could be for other reasons, specific reasons. People like, and oh, another thing is that if you are used to the rote method and you shift away from it, it can be very anxiety provoking. That's another thing is that with the Asian experience, I've seen that a lot of students from Asia are so used to the rote method. If you do any group work or teamwork using the language, they get so anxious because it's a very different system than what they're used to. So that's when the culture comes in. So anxiety, you know, plays a part, but also culture plays a bigger part as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a comfort zone thing, isn't it? Where you can hide behind your test results, but when you're asked to speak, the spotlight's on you, you have to perform
yes
right away. But yeah, I think you should just mix it up, really. I mean, there's no taking it away, but
yeah, you need to know the vocabularies. Like I tell my students, you know, put an aim, put a target to learn a couple of vocabularies per day, and then that needs the memorization. You need to memorize those words and what do they mean, but then spice it up with using those words in, you know, everyday sentences that come up. Try to aim in everyday use. If you learn five words, try to speak to people around you using and put those five words that you've just learned into sentences in conversation with a friend or a neighbor or anybody that, you know, on the street that you want to ask a question. Make an effort to use those words that you've just memorized and you know what they mean. Try to make it up and spice it up with those sentences. Those sentences are maybe 99% are going to be wrong, you know, unless you memorize those sentences. But in everyday conversation, it comes up. You're not going to use those ones that you've memorized and use them because it's just going to be fake. It's just not going to be right. You're going to have to change it. And so with that, that comes in the combination maybe of Rote Method and everyday life. And that's the spicing up and how interesting language can become.
Exactly. And my final question is, we're coming up to about the end of the interview here, but you're doing the research on the anxious language, and I guess you can call your headline of your research, but mm-hmm. where do you hope that your postdoctoral research will take you, and how do you hope to change the world with with the research? Let's be ambitious.
Oh, change the world. Wow. World peace. <Yeah. laughs> That would be the first thing. Change the world. I mean, I can't change the world. I wish I could, but I mean, the only thing is that I can educate people or educate teachers, educate students. It's not their fault as the students, because a lot of students think it's their fault. They have something wrong with them that they can't do this.
Right.
That's one of the things that I really hate hearing when somebody tells me that, one of this, like, oh, I just can't do it because, you know, I'm not good at languages. Like, everybody's good at languages, but it's just how how you approach the language. As well as teachers, like I have, when I'm with teachers, and some I've really actually heard that, like, oh, I have terrible students, and I'm like, what? You can't say that. but it's the, so, you know, if I educate teachers and say, look, these are not terrible students, they are just anxious students. If we can just pay more attention to them and apply different methods to them, that would help them. So I give lectures all over the world. I've just come from Turkey. I've done two lectures there and the university there in Istanbul. And I lecture in the UK, and I go to Japan and a couple of other countries. But my main concern is always to target the teachers, to target the students. Is like, you're not alone for the students. This happens to anybody, anywhere, and with any language. The teachers is like, there's no actual bad students or good students. They're all good, but is how you're teaching them. Let's just adjust the way you teach them. You could be the best teacher on earth, but the way you're sending the information is what making those students anxious. So if I can educate the language learner and the language teacher, I'm really happy. That's my ultimate goal. And my new book, which is coming out next year, that's going to be very academic. It's going to be targeted towards the teachers. So that's with Greuter, the publisher. So they are going to be very, you know, very educational, facts and research and, you know, statistics on there. But that's for the teachers, I think, and for a general researcher to know. But this book is more of everybody. So that's why I wanted to start with one that is targeting everybody. And then we go into the research itself. So I'm really happy. The response when I give those lectures and I educate the people, the teachers or the students, I get lots of positive responses from them. And they go, oh, wow, this is an eye-opener. I never thought there was such a thing or called language anxiety. It was always like,
right.
You know, I'm not that good. No, nobody's not that good. It's just, you know, just pay attention to these things. Be aware of the anxiety. Face it. Okay, yes, I have it. Okay, let's figure it out and how to overcome it. Right. And then with that having been said, I am very happy with the results I'm getting.
It's fantastic. And spreading awareness is the first step. And you also put that as one of the ways for the teachers to improve immediately is to simply tell the students, okay, listen up. Some of you are going to feel anxious about this. It's probably not the best way to say it, but, you know, just attack the problem at the front and make the students aware that this is what happens and you shouldn't really feel bad about it. And I agree that if we can, you know, spread the message as far as we can, then I'm sure we'll improve language learning worldwide and indeed change the world. So
It is. And you know what? You're saying because it could change the world, and it is. And I think it will change the world because we will be able to speak more languages. So the more people we can communicate, the more tolerance we have in this world, the more understanding of the different cultures, because you just can't pick up a language without picking up the culture,
of course,
right?
Yeah.
So they go hand in hand. So the more exposure I have to different cultures, that will produce tolerance. I will understand why these people are doing it this way because I'm aware of that language and I can speak to them and communicate with them. So the more languages we have, the more tolerance we'll have in this world. And then we'll have world peace.
I agree completely, and let's hope for that. But in the meantime, thank you so much for coming onto the show and sharing your story with us. It was a great pleasure for me personally. So.
Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. I hope everybody else benefits from it.
Yeah, I hope so too. And if anyone's interested, they can pick up The Anxious Language Learner in a bookshop near you, maybe, or Amazon. Or what's the best place?
Amazon. Yeah, it's on Amazon. And it's on Nook as well, and I think an iBook as well. Yes.
Fantastic. That has like 99% of the world covered, I'm sure. So.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, and best of luck with the research, and I hope to hear more from you in the future.
Well, thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Actual Fluency Podcast.